This is a WSMI podcast from the Tally Broadcasting Station.
10 minutes after 6 on this Tuesday morning, part 1 of the Morning Ag Show, brought to you by the McAdams Millwright Service. Now with part 1 of the Morning Ag Show, we join WSMI Ag Director Gabe Osborne.
Thank you very much, Randy, and good morning. There was no trading on the Chicago Board of Trade yesterday in observance of Memorial Day, so we'll recap what happened for you on Friday of last week. First off, in your corn futures, they ended the day Friday softer, with July and the old crop closing 7¾ cents lower, 6.56¾, December new crop 9½ cents lower to 5.73¼. For last week, July only closed 2¾ cents lower, and it might be hard to believe when there were only 2-day limit moves. December new crop corn finished a penny lower last week. If just viewing weekly closes, it was a boring week of price consolidation. The range in July corn was a weekly high of 6.72¾ and a low of 6.02¾, a 70-cent range there. After the Memorial Day weekend, the rubber will hit the road. Weather becomes the dominant factor going into the month of June and will decide price direction. Price direction is a combination of fundamental factors of is the crop getting bigger or smaller, or is demand expanding or contracting, money flow, and technical signals on the chart in the Board of Trade. If there are concerns this year, it will likely come from a continuation of dry conditions that started last year, especially in the western parts of the Corn Belt. At this point in the growing season, an argument can't really be made that the crop is in good shape or it is in bad shape, but futures are at a crossroads. Many expect crop ratings this coming week to be good. Recent moisture and a fast planting start suggests good emergence, and if emerged crop is in green color, it will be rated as good to excellent. Cooler temperatures might be limiting growth, but it'd only be temporary. Ethanol margins, on the other hand, remain in the black with tight inventories of corn, and many expect a strong consumer gas usage over the last weekend and this early summer as COVID concerns lessen. Your soybean futures close with moderate losses on Friday of 6½ in the July to 15.30½ and 5½ cents lower in the November at 13.72¾. For last week, July gained 4¼, November gained 12¼. November futures have closed 13 consecutive months higher. Historically tight carryout provides underlying support, which implies weather conditions will need to be nearly ideal to improve enough inventory, to provide enough inventory, for the year ahead. Here in the very near future, as we head into the month of June, many are seeing some basis decline, which would imply that processors are likely more hand-to-mouth, meaning they take what they need and don't stockpile. This also might imply that they have enough perceived inventory purchased, or that for the moment they're unwilling to pay a high price, chasing bean prices higher, which also makes sense considering the planting pace is above the 5-year average as well. Soybean oil continues to support the bean complex as a whole, as a tight world vegetable oil supply is supportive into the summer of this year. Soybean meal, however, continues to trade in a consolidation mode near $400 a ton, where it has spent most of the time this year. And there also could be more concerns of some frost in the northern parts of the Corn Belt, as we still cannot break this cold snap that we've been experiencing for some time. Now moving on into your wheat highlights from Friday. July Chicago was down by 12¾ to 6.63½. December down 11½ at 6.73¾. July Kansas City down 13 to 6.13¼. December down 13 at 6.32¼. For last week, July Chicago wheat and Kansas City both lost 10¾. As was warned on Thursday, Friday, many saw traders playing it safe ahead of the 3-day holiday weekend and providing a profit-taking look to put in place of wheat. 2,900 to 3,200 contracts were closed on Friday. The Black Sea research firm Sov Econ cut its 2021 Russian wheat crop forecast from 81.7 to 80.9 million metric ton, as dry weather once again is putting crop production in jeopardy there. Russia's winter wheat crop has recently received plenty of moisture, but the spring wheat areas have not. Combine this with the U.S. spring wheat concerns, then the market should be closely monitored and could ultimately lend support to other wheat futures by nothing more than association. Expanding drought and freeze concerns in the northern plains were not traded on Friday, but that doesn't mean that they aren't there. Many will see what Tuesday's crop progress report will say for the wheat crop. The outlook for the Dakotas is not expected to improve, with 31% of the North Dakota wheat crop only rated in good to excellent condition. This coming Wednesday, the 2nd, Russia will be implementing another higher export tax to continue to try to curb inflation costs there. So to recap, your mostly lower grain futures from Friday of last week off the Board of Trade. Corn for July down 7 3/4 to 656 3/4. December new crop down 9.5 in the corn, 545.5 from Friday. July beans down 6.5 to 1530.5. November new crop down 5.5, 1372 3/4. July wheat down 12 3/4 from Chicago, 663.5. September wheat down 12 1/4, 667 1/4. July oats up 4 3/4 Friday, 377.5. September oats 7 1/4 cents higher, 380 1/4. July bean meal gained 520 a ton, 395.50. August bean meal up 470, 396.50. Finally, bean oil for July down $1.02, 65.79, and August bean oil down 90 cents at 62.33. Now we'll take you to the Illinois Department of Agriculture in Springfield for last Friday's cash grain report.
This is Thursday's reported grain price and trends prepared by the Illinois Department of Agriculture. Illinois country grain prices are sharply higher on Thursday afternoon. Corn has been down the 40-cent limit earlier in the week and now is up the 40-cent limit. In northern West Des Moines, grain dealers quoted shell corn bids up 37 to 41 cents at 663 to 695. Soybeans bids are 31 to 34 cents higher at 1509 to 1538. In central Illinois, country grain dealers quoted shell corn bids up 39 to 41 cents at 655 to 699. Soybean bids are 34 cents higher at 1527 to 1574. In the southern part of the state, shell corn bids were up 39 to 42 cents at 676 to 712. Soybean bids are 33 to 35 cents higher at 1526 to 1577. Illinois soybean processors cash soybean bids are 24 to 32 cents higher at 1557 to 1562. Basis was down 2 to 10 at 20 over to 25 over to July. Illinois corn processor cash corn bids were 40 cents higher at 675 to 710, while basis unchanged at 10 over to 45 over to July. Illinois river barge floating elevators coated their produced corn bids 39 cents higher, 699 to 704. Basis was down 1 at 34 over to 39 over the July. Soybeans ended up 31 to 34 cents at 1542 to 1552. Basis was steady to down 3 at 5 over to 15 over the July. New crop wheat prices are 28 cents higher at 686 to 691, with basis unchanged at 10 over to 15 over the July. East St. Louis Barcelona Commit placed their producer corn bids up 40 cents. 724 to 725. These elevators raise their soybean prices 33 cents. Quotations at 1571 to 1572. Soft wheat closed up 27 cents at 687 to 688, while Milo ended the day 40 cents higher at 715 to 720. Contract bids producers for October, November delivery corn in the northern part of the state at 520 to 545. Soybeans at 1333 to 1358. In the central part of the state, corn for October, November delivery at 523 to 544. Soybeans at 1348 to 1366. In the southern part of the state, corn for October, November delivery at 520 to 574. Soybeans at 1338 to 1395. That concludes our report. This is David Humphreys with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
Moving on now to your livestock numbers from Friday of last week off the Board of Trade. Fat cattle and feeder cattle lower on Friday, hogs higher by $1.50 to $2.65. First off, live cattle futures had a quiet session and prices in the front end of the cattle market drifted lower to the close of the week. June cattle lost 47 cents to 115.87, August down 82 to 118.60. Cattle futures failed to find any footing last week, and June ended last week $1.80 lower. August dropped $2.32 for the week. The cattle market lacks bullish news overall, and Friday's close was concerning. August cattle drifted under a key moving average support level on the close, which may open the door for additional pressure and liquidation to start this week. Cash cattle trade was basically done for last week, with the exception of some cleanup trade. Last week's trade had Southern live deals marked at 116 to 120, mostly in the $119 to $120 range, steady to a dollar higher than 2 weeks ago for the weighted averages. Northern dressed deals had a range of 187 to 192, mostly at the $191 mark, generally steady with 2 weeks ago. June futures are trading at a discount to the cash, and that should help support the futures price. Upward momentum in carcass values slowed at the end of last week, and prices were mixed at midday Friday. Choice carcasses gained 6 cents to $3.3004, but selects were $2 lower to $3.0210. Choice carcasses are generally higher last week, but since of Wednesday, prices traded relatively flat. Slowing momentum in the retail prices could be concerning. The retail market may be in a window for the Memorial Day holiday to the 4th of July, where prices could slip, adding pressure to the cash and futures market. The biggest problem facing the cattle market is the slow processing speeds and cattle supply building. This has kept the cash market mostly steady and moved the futures market into a sideways overall trading range. The concern is prices may have to break lower before they can work back higher into the end of the year. Feeder cattle futures were pressured by the lackluster cattle market and the premium of the front month over the cash index. August feeders on Friday, which are now the front month, lost $1.50 to $151.30. September feeders traded $1.30 lower to $153.52. The cash index is trading at a $136.12 step, which is a steep discount to the futures. There is time to pair those two together, but that may make it difficult for the feeder prices to push higher. Finally, your hog market from Friday was higher as front month prices pushed to new contract high and high closes on Friday. June hogs gained $1.52 to $117.25. July hogs $2.65 higher, $119.35. On the close on Friday, June through August contracts finished with new contract highs. For last week, June hogs gained $3.02. July was $2.80 higher. The push in the market started with the strong retail close Thursday afternoon that brought buying optimism into the open market as June hogs gapped higher on first trades. The retail strength held into the midday on Friday as the pork carcasses gained $2.21 to $128.58. The movement was moderate at 212 midday loads traded. Carcass values were higher throughout the entire week, trading nearly $6 higher than last Monday's close, finishing at $122.21. The demand for pork has stayed strong even at these higher retail carcass prices. The cash hog index traded 58 cents higher Friday to $113.08, finishing the week with a gain of $1.64 for the 16th consecutive week of higher trade. The hog market may be concerned regarding the court decision last week to slow slaughter chain speed in some packing plants, but in the short term, a tighter product supply could help lift the carcass value with given demand, but could eventually weigh on the market overall. Keep an eye on the headlines for further details. Technically, the hog market and the product market is strong, and despite being overboughten, they're still looking for a top. So recapping your lower cattle futures and your higher hog futures from Friday off the Board of Trade, June fat cattle were 47 cents lower Friday, 115.87. August fat cattle down 82, 118.60. October fat cattle on Friday down 47 cents, 123.70. August feeders on Friday down $1.50, 151.35. September feeders down $1.30, 153.52. October feeders down $1.22 at 155.02. Finally, your hog futures from Friday had June up $1.52, 117.25, July up $2.65 Friday, 119.35, and your August hogs on Friday gained $2.40, 116.22. Now we'll move on and take you back to the Illinois Department of Agriculture in Springfield for Friday's Cash Livestock Report.
This is the Illinois Department of Agriculture with Friday Afternoon Livestock Report. Starting with the National Daily Direct Hog Report, Calculations for a 200-pound pork carcass traded 230 higher, in a range of 99.74 to 117, with the weighted average carcass price of 107.21. From the Illinois Direct Sour Report, slaughter sow prices were weak, with light to moderate demand for heavy offerings. U.S. 1 and 3 grade sows weighing under 400 pounds traded at $38 to $44, 4 to 5 weighed at $41 to $46, 5 to 6 weighed at $44 to $49, and over 600 pounds at $46 to $52. On the Illinois Direct Hog Trade, prices for barrels and gilts at the country buying points were firm, with light to moderate demand for light offerings, ranging from $71 to $74. Packer receipts for barrels and gilts totaled $18,037. In the direct cattle trade from the National Daily Direct Slaughter Cattle Report, steers on a dressed basis traded at $192. Heifers on a dressed basis traded at $192. From the National Daily Pork Plant Report, trading for retail and processing cuts was established with 319 loads traded. Calculations for a 200-pound pork carcass was $126.59, which was 22 cents higher. From the National Box Beef Cutout Report, values for choice and select beef carcasses were trading mixed. Choice carcasses were $330.97, which was 99 cents higher. Select carcasses at $300.90, which was $3.20 lower. For the estimated daily slaughter under federal inspection, cattle slaughter was estimated at 117,000, compared to 119,000 last week and 110,000 one year ago. Hog slaughter was estimated at 425,000, compared to 463,000 last week and 422,000 one year ago. That concludes our livestock report. This is Katie Lemonager with the Illinois Department of Agriculture.
And that's all for part one of the Morning Ag Show, brought to you this morning by the McAdams Millwright Service. Radar shows scattered light showers around the mid-Illinois listening area on this Tuesday morning. Cloudy skies at the Weather Center on this Tuesday morning, and right now we have a temperature of 58 degrees. Part two of the Morning Ag Show, brought to you this morning by Seavers Equipment of Hamel, Hillsboro, Greenfield, Auburn, Carlinville, and Jerseyville. And once again, we join WSMI Ag Director Gabe Osborne.
Thanks again, Randy. Now here in Ag News on a Tuesday. More than 40 farm groups are appealing to House and Senate leaders not to impose new tax burdens on agriculture to pay for any Biden infrastructure and social spending plans. The message is simple. Don't change tax policies like stepped-up basis and like-kind exchanges in a way that hinders farmland transfers within families and then to others like minority and beginning farmers. National Cattlemen's Danielle Beck.
Various proposals that are currently being discussed on the table, I think, absolutely threaten the viability of family-owned agricultural operations and cattle operations in particular.
Beck is among a group of 40 asking congressional leaders for a common-sense approach to any tax change, especially to the stepped-up basis.
Assets in agriculture are typically held by one owner for several decades, and so resetting the basis on the value of land, equipment, livestock, you name it, on the date of the owner's death under that step-up is really important for surviving family members.
And also for possible new owners.
It may be well-intentioned, but it's an obligation that would discourage the sale of farmland, potentially increasing the cost of that land and restricting the availability of it, creating new barriers to entry for, you know, beginning farmers and ranchers, minority and underserved populations.
Which is the same group of people that Beck says the Biden administration is trying to help. Separately, USDA says it will comply with a March court order to reverse a Trump rule that would have ended pork plant line speed limits. The National Pork Producers Council predicted increased packer market power and irreparable harm to small hog farmers, while disputing claims of harm to worker safety. Now in the latest ag news from around the world, Argentina ranchers are protesting the government's decision to suspend beef exports by halting their sales of cattle. One of the country's beef producer associations announced the halt will continue through Wednesday, June 2nd. The sales strike began several days ago, and the country said it will ban beef exports for 30 days because high food inflation has caught the attention of officials ahead of the midterm elections in Argentina. Groups protesting the decision issued a statement saying the policy path chosen by the government will not achieve the stated goal of lowering domestic meat price. Reuters says the export ban pushed agriculture groups to halt the trading of livestock as tensions continue between the country's farm sector and the government, which is dealing with a forecast of consumer price inflation at 50% this year. Farm groups in Argentina are asking the government to address inflation by printing fewer pesos. A source from the Argentina Meat Exporters Consortium tells Reuters that there is a permanent dialogue with the government. The problem is we can't find a solution. Argentina exported over 897,000 tons of beef last year, which was worth $2.7 billion. Another ag news out of South America. Brazil is facing its worst drought seen since 1930, causing the government to issue a drought alert. Late last week, an agency that's a part of the Brazilian Mine and Energy Ministry recommended the country's water regulator to recognize a state of water scarcity after a prolonged drought hit central and southern parts of Paraná River Basin. FinancialPost.com says a weather monitoring agency that's part of the Agricultural Ministry issued its first emergency drought alert for June through September, saying that rain is likely to remain scarce in five Brazilian states during the period. The lack of rain across Brazil is hurting their agricultural commodities, livestock, and electricity generation, as Brazil relies heavily on hydroelectric-powered dams. Drier-than-normal weather is especially hard on the second corn crop, sugar, and coffee. Coffee futures recently have hit a four-year high as traders are concerned that drought could even affect the 2022 crop. As they try to deal with the trouble, the Mines and Energy Ministry announced measures aimed at adjusting water levels that supply the country's hydroelectric dams to try and prevent power shortages. Add in the latest ag trade news with our neighbors to the north. Trade officials are walking a narrow line with the ongoing issue of the Canadian and U.S. softwood lumber dispute. Several ranking Republicans are expressing interest in ending a current 9% levy on Canadian softwood products that enter into the U.S. Conversely, just last week, the U.S. Commerce Department put forward a recommendation that existing tariffs be doubled to more than 18%. The Commerce Department says that Canadian lumber is unfairly subsidized as it's mostly grown on public land with harvesting fees set by Ottawa. In the U.S., timber is mainly harvested from privately owned land. The World Trade Organization has ruled on this issue numerous times and typically has ruled in Canada's favor, citing no unfair subsidies at play. British Columbia's Lumber Trade Council says a move to double tariff levels is particularly egregious for a marketplace facing record-high lumber prices at the moment. Joel Neuenheimer with the Forest Association Products of Canada was more blunt in his response. Neuenheimer says the Commerce Department is reflecting a politically motivated Buy American mindset.
I think, unfortunately, in U.S. politics, protectionism is still a very popular tactic, whether it's the softwood lumber dispute and the five rounds that we've had to date, or whether it's the Buy American plan. That makes for good politics in the United States. It really doesn't make good economic sense for the U.S. consumers. You would hope that eventually U.S. politicians will take that into consideration and that economics will prevail over any political tactics.
And lumber prices have increased exponentially over the last 18 months, the perfect storm of an industry caught completely off guard by unexpected demand, an extended building season, and crippled production and supply lines have all led to lumber shortages across North America. Joel Neuenheimer explains.
If you go back to the beginning of 2020, the industry really wasn't expecting a very hot market. With everybody locked down, a number of our large customers were canceling orders because they had no idea what to expect. And so circumstances of the pandemic have created some never seen before dynamics. Combine that with the fact that we had an extra long building season last winter. We didn't have that much snow in Canada and the U.S. We're seeing unprecedented highs in lumber prices right now. So we're seeing prices that are year, four times the 20-year average.
Former President Trump's administration imposed a 20% tariff on Canadian softwood back in 2018, but was forced to lower it to the current 9% tariff late last year, following a decision favoring Canada by the World Trade Organization. And in ag news from here in the United States, further strengthening of the U.S. ag economy has bolstered farm credit conditions in the first quarter of this year. A Federal Reserve survey of agriculture credit conditions shows farm loan repayment rates continue to improve rapidly. After many years of growing financial stress and weakness in the ag economy, bankers reported that farm income was higher than a year ago for the second consecutive quarter, and demand for farm loans has weakened. Interest rates on farm loans remained at historic lows during the quarter. Along with the better financial conditions, the lower interest rates helped to support widespread increases in farmland value. Stronger markets for most of the major commodities have led to higher prices and expanding profit opportunities across the sector in recent months. With the help of robust government support due to COVID, ag sector conditions have led to a rapid improvement in farm finances. While prospects aren't as strong in the cattle industry, and drought continues to stress producers in many areas of rural America, the overall outlook for farm income and credit conditions remains significantly improved from recent years. And in the latest national livestock news, a panel discussion during the U.S. Meat Export Federation's virtual spring conference focused on marketing U.S. red meat in the new post-pandemic normal. Michael Clemens has this report.
USMEF representatives from around the globe offered their insights to how markets are changing heading into a post-pandemic era. Joel Haggard, USMEF Senior Vice President for the Asia-Pacific region, says that in China, despite closed borders, the economy is growing.
Inside China, there's a very strong economy, and those closed borders are really helping fuel very good food service and retail spending. Despite this bilateral political tension that's been in place for several years, the market access for our beef and pork has remained, luckily, somewhat stable. The e-commerce is growing increasingly complex. COVID, of course, accelerated online food sales. So in terms of the Chinese consumer, they're very confident right now. Chinese consumers coming of age, and there's more emphasis now on healthy products and products that are going to be good for me. And that helps fresh food, and it helps our high-quality beef and pork category.
Jihei Yang of USMEF in South Korea says U.S. bone-in steaks that were once found only in high-end restaurants are becoming popular in the Korean retail sector.
Tomahawk steak and vertically cut bone-in short rib, known as kimping rib in Korea, are the two mega items this year. Tomahawk steak menu have been out there in high-end restaurants for a while, and it became popular among general public since Outback Steakhouse in Korea launched a U.S. Tomahawk steak in 2017. All retail chains are now selling Tomahawk steak. So this contributed to U.S. loin export increased by 40% for the first 4 months this year.
Gerardo Rodriguez, USMEF Marketing Director for Mexico and Central America, says in Mexico, the pandemic forced distributors to shift to direct marketing to consumers and new channel development.
During 2020, and the food service facing so many problems, some of the distributors, they shift from selling from business to business to business to consumer. This means that they were opening new stores, they were targeting the end consumer, and they were trying to reach a different audience. So they were developing a new segment for them.
USMEF Japan Director Takamichi Yamashoji says the nation should see an economic resurgence around the Tokyo Olympics and expects tourism to soon resume.
Tokyo Olympics is planning to start on July 23rd through August 8th. Direct Olympic economic effect is more than $30 billion. After Olympics, and increase the number of the vaccine shots in Japan, I think we can expect the Japanese government will ease to accept tourists from overseas. The number of tourists has been growing in the past several years, and in 2019, the number of tourists was a record high.
Learn more online at usmef.org. Michael Clements reporting.
And now let's take a look into state and local ag news here on a Tuesday. A message of unity will be the theme throughout the fairgrounds of the Springfield and DeCoin State Fair this summer. One Illinois is the theme, which will be showcased throughout the 2021 state fairs. One Illinois is aimed at uniting Illinoisans after COVID-19 led to the cancellation of both fairs last year. Illinois' proud agricultural tradition has long been the force that drives our state forward, and the last 18 months have been no different. In March of 2020, when the world seemed to come to a halt, our state's number one industry kept right on going, said Governor Pritzker. While the COVID-19 pandemic demanded a temporary pause to the state fairs, communities across the state will once again have a chance to come together as one Illinois this August to celebrate our number one industry and the people that keep us all going. We are excited to bring everyone back together on our fairgrounds in Springfield and DeCoin, said Jerry Costello II, director of the Illinois Department of Agriculture. If this year has taught us anything, it's that we're all Illinoisans. This underscores the importance for everyone to get vaccinated as well. Everyone doing their part will ensure the safety of fairgoers, vendors, and staff when we all gather to celebrate this summer. We put a lot into this year's theme, according to Illinois State Fair Manager Kevin Gordon. Coming off a year where the fair was canceled for the first time since World War II, we want to convey a show of unity, and strength when people return to the fairgrounds in August. The One Illinois theme will be displayed throughout the Springfield and DeCoin State Fairgrounds, as well as on the 2021 Illinois and DeCoin State Fair logos and merchandise. The Illinois State Fair runs August 12th through the 22nd in Springfield, while the DeCoin State Fair takes place August 27th through September 6th. And in our local Ag Community Bulletin Board, the Hillsboro Old Time Tractor Show will be held coming up on Saturday in conjunction with the Montgomery County Bicentennial Celebration. Again, the Tractor Show will be held this Saturday and also on Sunday at the Montgomery County Fairgrounds in Butler. Also happening on Saturday at the Bicentennial event, the Mid-Illinois Livestock Producers will be cooking up ribeye sandwiches, hamburgers, and all-beef hot dogs at the event. They'll start their serving at about 11 a.m. on Saturday, and they'll be there until they are sold out. Coming up next Saturday, the 12th, the Montgomery County Farm Bureau Young Leaders will be handing out popcorn during the Irish Days Parade in Farmersville. Coming up later on in the month of June, the Dudley Smith Farm Outreach Meeting will be featuring a research update on soil health and cover crops, using cover crops with annuals, progress towards soil phosphorus credits, and long-term effects of management practices on nitrogen loss. This virtual meeting will be held 10 a.m. till noon on Wednesday, June 16th. The meeting is free and open to the public. Advanced registration is available by Friday, June 11th, by going online to go.illinois.edu/DSF meeting. More information is also available from the Christian County Extension Office in Taylorville, and you can call them at 217-287-7246. And that'll wrap up your Ag News here on this Tuesday morning. But remember, you can always send us your Ag News by an email at WSMI@WSMIRadio.com. So again, for this Tuesday morning, June 1st, this has been Gabe Osborne reporting WSMI Ag News.